Welcome to Sports Spectrum, the sports and faith podcast that brings Jesus back into the conversation. Here's your host, Jason Romano.
Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Spectrum podcast. I am Jason Romano. It is great to have you joining us here today on the show. Really excited about our guest, Chris Marlowe. He is the author of the book, Doing Good is Simple, Making a Difference Right Where You Are. And Chris is making a big difference in the world, having started an amazing foundation called Help One Now. But before we get to our conversation with Chris, I want to tell you about a brand new podcast that is coming your way Monday, December 16th. And you can subscribe right now. It's called Football Sunday, and it comes to you from the producers of Sports Spectrum. It's our second podcast. What you're listening to right now is the first podcast, Sports Spectrum's podcast. Our new podcast, Sports Spectrum's production, is called Football Sunday. And this is a really awesome podcast because it brings unique first-person stories from professional football players in the NFL talking about how God has moved profoundly in their life. It's really a neat thing. It comes directly from the athletes. You'll hear stories from people like Drew Brees and Thomas Davis, Kirk Cousins, Matt Hasselbeck, Benjamin Watson. All of their stories will be featured, first-person stories, on the Football Sunday podcast. The podcast itself will be 12 episodes starting Monday, December 16th, and then every Monday going forward, a new episode will drop all the way through to Super Bowl Sunday, the Monday after it, Monday, February 3rd. 12 episodes, Football Sunday's podcast coming your way Monday, December 16th. Click on the subscribe button, search for it. Make sure that you never miss an episode. Go to Football Sunday Podcast on any app that you listen to podcasts on. Click that subscribe button. And man, we're excited. So can't wait for you to hear it. Football Sunday coming Monday, December 16th. Chris Marlowe is our guest today on Sports Spectrum. And this is one of those stories that you're going to want to listen to a few times because he has a ton of wisdom, but he also has a really profound, impactful, personal story that he's walked through. He's a product of a broken family, divorce, multiple divorces in his family with his mom and his dad. He's a product of an absent father, a dad who abandoned him. He hasn't seen his dad in 30 plus years. He has an incredible story of coming to faith in Christ and then taking that faith out and living it out by starting this amazing company called Help One Now. It's a nonprofit doing amazing work. I know I say amazing, but it really is awesome work. And he wrote a book, like I said earlier, Doing Good is Simple, Making a Difference Right Where You Are. Chris Marlowe is making a big difference, and you're going to love his story. Take a listen to Chris Marlowe here on Sports Spectrum's podcast. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Jason, thanks for having me, man. Excited to be here and love what you all have been doing, been following for multiple years. And so it's fun to kind of join in your community and chat about sports and life and making an impact around the world.
Impact is a good word, and you've certainly done that throughout your journey and your life. But your story, while it's an awesome one and we're going to get to in just a second, I know starting with sports is usually the way to go with a podcast like this and a journey like yours. So why don't we go there first? Tell us how sports played a role, a part in your life growing up. I know you grew up outside of Oakland, California.
Yeah, it's fascinating. When it's all said and done, like I have the least like sports bod ever, right? Like, you know, I'm 5'7". For multiple years of my life, I was really overweight. And so it was sports that had this fascinating connection and relationship. I think growing up in kind of the area I grew up in with kind of the broken family system, sports was really a lifeline for me. I spent many, many, many hours finding refuge on the basketball court or the football fields of Northern California. And I just remember when I think think about sports, and you know, there's this fanaticism that can be connected to it, and it's almost like, whoa, that can sometimes often be scary, but often sports is a lifeline for many folks. I know for me it was a lifeline, and I look back at my days imagining myself being Magic Johnson on the basketball courts of Northern California, and that literally was truly a refuge back then. And so I always talk about sports really did help me stay sane until I really found, you know, more faith. I didn't grow up in the faith background, and so sports was my faith for many years, and I still love sports today, and I'm very, very thankful that the Lakers are a little better than the Celtics.
Well, hold on a sec now. Now, and we can get into the Lakers-Celtics dynamic in a second, but you grew up in Northern California. You should be a Warriors fan, right?
Never.
Why are you a Lakers fan?
I'm really old, right? I'm like, and so like back in the 80s, I tell this, you know, like NBA was not on a lot, and it was almost always the Lakers. And so when you, and this was, you know, I mean, I remember Byron Scott being drafted by the Lakers. We're talking, you know, old school, early 80s basketball, and even college football. Like, I never really grew up being like a fan of USC or UCLA or Stanford or Cal because they weren't on TV, but Notre Dame was always on TV. So I grew up a huge Notre Dame fan, even though, you know, I'm in Northern California. So the Lakers were always on TV, Showtime, you know, Lakers and whatnot. And so they were, they were the team of California. Golden State really didn't matter back then.
Yeah, that's very true. And I know if you're an 80s basketball fan, Michael Jordan came in 85, so you might be a little younger than you and I. You and I are the same age, actually. And growing up in the 80s, you were either Celtics or Lakers. And even as as in New York, upstate New York, growing up, my brother and I, my brother chose the Lakers, I chose the Celtics. So I don't think it really mattered in the 80s where you lived, because you're right. The Lakers and the Celtics were on all the time.
Yeah, and if you wanted to get really wild, you would choose the 76ers and Dr. J.
But that's true. That's true.
That was it. That was the third option if you wanted to be bold and kind of outside mainstream. So
interesting.
But yeah, sports really, honestly, like it, you know, and I think, you know, what we see even now, sports can be used for so much good around the world.
Yes.
And for me, it was an incredibly important part of my childhood. Just being, it literally was my refuge, and I'm thankful, you know, to be a part of. Now, here's the problem, Jason. This is what's really sad.
Okay.
So, I played. I mean, I can't. You know, if Malcolm Gladwell says 10,000 hours makes you an expert, I was an expert in basketball. I just didn't have the physical gifting, right? Like, I spent that much time on the courts in Northern California. I just remember every single day leaving school, getting on a bus, heading to the basketball court. So the problem is I didn't have the right body, right? But 10,000 hours – I should literally be an expert, but about 4 or 5 weeks ago, I hadn't played basketball, you know, in years. And I just, I'm outside of my little CrossFit gym and they have a little, they have a hoop and I'm just out there like shooting baskets. And then a friend of mine who actually has never really played basketball, he grew up in China and he's here getting his master's degree. He was like, show me how to do a crossover dribble. So I was trying to show him a crossover dribble and my knees have been hurting ever since. It was like 45 seconds of like trying to explain to my 27-year-old friend what a crossover dribble was. And I literally am getting like, you know, PT treatment all the time now. So
I tell you, I used to play ball all the time at the YMCA. I play pickup. Even our church league had a run that we would do. And I loved playing and I would go up and down. I played hard and I'm not any good. I mean, I had a little jumper or whatever. But at like 42, I'm 46 now. At 42, I had this really bad injury in my hand and I have really bad knees. I never had surgery or anything, but I just stopped playing, Chris. I just didn't want to be in pain anymore.
That's it.
I miss
it. No, I'm literally, I wish I would have never picked up the basketball that day. That's, I will say this for those listening and you're young enough or, you know, like playing, like you don't, it's not, you don't get to do it your whole life. So enjoy it while you can, because it is a special thing to be out there with friends and to play and to have fun and to stay in shape. But it is, there's a time on it for sure.
Yeah. Now I'm an old guy and I just go for walks, which is really sad when you think about it, but that's all right. Chris Marlowe is our guest here on Sports Spectrum's podcast. You mentioned that broken family dynamic, and you can go in as deep as you want to go into with that. But tell us about what that was like, because I grew up in a home of divorce. My parents divorced when I was six as well. So I kind of know what that sports respite was like, to kind of go in and gravitate towards something to take your mind off of maybe all the stuff that was yep. going on. But tell me about that. And then take us to the moment where faith became a part of your life and became real.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's fascinating to go back into those moments. And I think for me, what was really interesting is my family had no faith dynamic to it. Like, I didn't even know faith was like a thing. I had never gone to church my whole life. Yeah. My mom was one of the most amazing humans ever, but she made some of the worst choices when it came to men. My mom and dad divorced when I was three, and I had never met my dad. Literally ever. I just had no memories, no recollection, no connection. I remember one day I was 8 years old, and I'm at home, and there's a little knock on the door. And on the other side of that door is a stranger, but he had a baseball glove and a bat. And see, what my dad didn't know, obviously, because he wasn't around, is I was like the worst baseball player ever, like in my whole school. That's why I played basketball. And I realized why, because I didn't know I needed glasses at the time. So I literally could not play baseball until the moment I put glasses on. I was like, oh my gosh, I can see the white ball. It won't hit me now. Yeah. But I remember even my dad offered me, like his peacemaking moment was a glove, a ball, and a bat. And my mom and dad remarried for 4 years, and then they divorced again when I was 12. And this was now my third, my father twice, but my mom had been married to two other guys in between. And I remember, when the second marriage for my mom and dad didn't work out, my dad spent about 8 months around our city. We actually did a tour up and down the West Coast one summer. As a young 12-year-old kid, we started in the Bay Area and went up to Seattle and L.A. and over to Vegas. I remember my dad dropped me back off at our trailer park, and he drove away. And it was the last time I've ever heard or seen my dad since. And it was one of those moments where, he was living basically 5 minutes away. And there was just a disappearing act on the part of my father. And so it was the second time he had done that. And, the long, long story short is my father was a unique gentleman. He, fought in the war, Vietnam War. He ended up becoming pretty significant leader in one of the largest biker gangs in America. He ended up killing an individual at a bar and got flipped to go undercover. And I don't think I talked about this in the book. I can't remember. But he ended up going undercover with another biker gang. And so a car would just literally show up every few weeks, and my dad would disappear. And we would be like, where's he going? We had no clue what was happening. And now it all kind of makes sense. It feels like there's a good chance, who knows what really happened to my father, but ultimately he, wasn't around. And I think at the end of the day, maybe when we find out the history, and this is even why when people hurt us in life, it's so easy to be angry at them, but sometimes they're hurting us by protecting us. And I think there's a good chance my father probably was in one way or another just protecting our family from some type of potential negative outcome. And so, but then my mother remarried another guy, and he was just literally a terrible human being. I mean, just a lot of violence, a lot of hatred, a lot of anger. And he was actually he grew up in the church, but became angry at the church. And so when I found faith, that made our relationship worse. I just grew up in a very violent home. And I think the reason why sports was so important to me, because I didn't know there was another reality. But this, like, I didn't know growing up in Stockton, California, a really significant violent town with a violent family. And I had no clue that there was another way to live. This is just all that I knew. And so all the trauma and pain and anger and what for me, my refuge, my rescue was playing sports. And the real interesting part of my life is we grew up in kind of the worst part of town. But my mom sent me to school on the other side of town. So I had this unique dynamic of going to a really wealthy, nice school system, but living in more of an inner city environment. And that dynamic alone has been really challenging in and of itself. But broken families, you know, we know that is a challenge that our society is facing. Yeah. And we need to do what we can to really, one, help keep families together, which we'll talk about later as a mission of Help One Now. But two, you know, one of the things that we can do more than anything else is try to find those folks who don't have the right family structure and, you know, step into their lives and mentor them and help them. And I had that happen to me. I had a youth pastor, a plumber, and a teacher step into my life in the worst moments. And those three people shifted everything for me and kind of the future outcome for who I am today.
Before we find out that story and kind of the turn that happens in your faith, can I ask you about seeking your father out? And have you tried to see where he is, looked for him, and then maybe even the dynamic of forgiveness, which is what I wrote about in my book with my father, and just that process? Because there's a lot there to kind of walk through in somebody's life if they haven't really thought about it or processed it.
Yeah, and I think I kind of alluded to this earlier, but I you know, the process for me, I think what happens, I became so independent at such an early age, I ended up living with multiple family members and friends at an early age. And so I just grew up really fast, and I felt like I didn't have time to like think about my dad. Like I just had to figure out how to survive. Yeah. And looking back now, being a father of two daughters, I do think if I could have a conversation with my father, I would probably find, you know, a really loving person who probably just didn't know how to love well. And I think one of the things I've learned so much is like, it's so easy for us to be angry at what we don't have, but there's a chance my father also didn't have what he couldn't give me. And so what I've been trying to do as a father is like repair kind of that generational curse, if you will, of, you know, what does it look like for me to be a good father, even though I never had that example in my life. And so, I've never really sought out my father. It just wasn't something that has really interested me. But one of the things I won't do and is I won't make what he lacked to give me an excuse for what I lack to give my kids.
Absolutely.
Or what it means to be responsible as a man. And I think oftentimes we feel like, you know, if we don't have the right, you know, past, then we can't, you know, create a better future. And it's just a lie. And so I focus most of my energy and my attention on creating a good future for my family and for others around me, as opposed to, you know, spending time, energy, being angry and frustrated at what I didn't have as a kid.
So walk us through getting to a point where Jesus, God, I mean, it sounds like the youth pastor, the plumber, and I forget the other person that you said,
the teacher
introduces you to Jesus. So tell us that story and how that begins.
Yeah, and I think it's fascinating, right? We're you know, obviously we'll talk about like the athletics side, you know, professional athletes. And, you know, one of the things that's a missing piece of the puzzle is it's everyday normal people that make the greatest impact in our lives. And so I know for many people listening to this podcast, you know, you're a construction worker, you're a teacher, you know, you're a business owner, you're, you know, a firefighter. And to an extent, it's almost like sometimes we don't realize the impact that's taking place is through the everyday normal moments of life. And that's what happened to me. I, you know, because I went to the school on the other side of town, I was always a kind of a unique kid. I remember, you know, my mom would drop me off in our car and it was like this old beat up car. And I would be so embarrassed to get out of the car when all my other friends had, you know, Lexus, Mercedes, all the nicer cars. And I would have her drop me off a few blocks down the road and walk to school because I was so embarrassed. And I've always lived in this unique dynamic and that tension. But we had one of my close friends growing up, a guy named Vaughn, who actually became one of the backup dancers for MC Hammer. So, and he actually is a really brilliant anime writer right now, really successful guy, really proud of him. He was just a high school friend, and we literally went to school together and played basketball every day of our lives after school. He was kind of, you know, my ride or die, and we just became super close. I had no clue he had grown up in church. And again, I just had no church background, so I didn't even know this was part of people's lives. And so there came a moment to where, you know, I'd gotten really close with his family, and they were inviting me over for dinner, and we were always, you know, together. And it was spring break in 1990-ish. I don't know. I can't remember now. So long ago. And I was on my way to San Diego to kind of do the typical California spring break party teenager thing. And I was with another friend, and we're in San Diego, and his father calls him and says, you know, our business burnt down. He actually owned a Mercedes dealership, and it burnt down, and we have to rush home. And so I remember we literally just got to San Diego. We were there for 2 hours, and now we're driving 7 hours back to our city. And I had nothing to do for spring break. And so somehow I connected with Vaughn. We had paged each other from and chatted on the phone. And his mom picks up the phone and says, hey, if you have nothing to do, why don't you go camping with us this weekend? Vaughn's going to go with a bunch of friends. And I literally thought we were going like outdoor camping. And I had no clue this was like a youth camp over spring break. And it was fascinating to me because – when I found out that was the case, I was like, I didn't know how to handle this moment. And so, but the cool thing is there was this girl named Jennifer who I was trying to date, and she was also a part of this youth group with my friend Vaughn, and she was going camping. So eventually I ended up saying yes. Super long story short, we didn't have the money. We found the money. We didn't have a ride. Happened. All these little mini miracles had taken place, and I find myself at this camp in the Northern California mountains with hundreds of other youth. And at that camp, it was a Wednesday night, and the speaker was actually a drug dealer from my neighborhood. He's one of the most feared kind of gang member drug dealers, but he was also a really well known football star. And so the people who led this camp were actually, you know, professional or actually collegiate athletes, and one had found success in life and the other one had kind of gone into the gangs and drugs. And that Wednesday night I found faith, and I remember a lady walking up to me and said, you haven't had a father your whole life, but now you have a father. His name is Jesus, and he will guide you. And it was like, I didn't resonate with any of it, because I didn't think of Jesus. Other than being a historical figure, I had no connection to religion or salvation or eternity. And so I was just so new to the faith. And I remember going back to high school and realizing there were so many believers that I had known for so long. And, you know, it was a weird thing that I'm now a part of their crew, and they're going to church together and youth group together. And but it was a big transformation story on my high school. And I ended up, you know, becoming a believer. And the individual who led me to the Lord was also the chaplain for the Oakland A's. And I spent many of my first 2 or 3 years of faith, you know, kind of in the sports world with him.
Interesting. That's such a great story. I love hearing stories. It doesn't matter who is on the podcast, whether it's an NFL player or an author or somebody who started a nonprofit. It's the testimonies, people resonate with those. And I love yours, Chris, because you were like me. You didn't grow up in the faith, and it didn't happen until you were a little bit older. And it was because one person took that effort to invest in you. And you mentioned these in a couple of different places that I've either read in your book or just interviews that I've seen you on or whatever, about that word interruptions in life. And that's an interruption, right? Because that changes the trajectory and the dynamic of your life here, and then certainly after you're gone. But then there's other interruptions, and we're probably skipping over a lot of your life here to do this, but this interruption takes us to Help One Now, which you mentioned in this amazing foundation that you created, in essence. So take us through what happened that eventually leads you to create and find Help One Now.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, after becoming a Christian, I ended up going into ministry, youth pastoring, planted a few churches, and really, you know, most of what we did was kind of urban and work that I'm really proud of. And but ultimately, it's kind of fascinating. Like, there's like this arc that God has us on. And, you know, I think there's this moment where if you just if you learn to simply trust God for each and every step, it's you really can't imagine where your life will end up. And so we always say a life interrupted is a life inspired. Mm. And I think we're so scared for God to interrupt our lives because we don't like uncertainty. And oftentimes we want to give God control of the things that we can't control, but the things we can control, we want to remove God from. And so oftentimes that's what we do. We remove God from, our vocation or in all these different opportunities. And so, a friend of mine had actually invited me to go visit him in Cape Town, South Africa for many years. And I kept saying, no, 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 had all these excuses, too busy, family, work, pastoring a church, all the different things. But deep in my heart, I just knew God was whispering again and again and again. And I think I was scared of what was on the other side of this yes. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the best life we can live is always on the other side of yes, when that yes is connected to faith and trust in God. And ultimately, I ended up finding myself in the, on this airplane heading to Africa. And we ended up meeting with this Zimbabwean leader named John and his wife, Orpa. And we decided to go into his community in Zimbabwe. Middle of the night, we stop at this abandoned gas station. I get out of this van and I'm surrounded by dozens upon dozens of orphan kids in Zimbabwe, roughly between 3 to 8 years old. And the leader of this pack grabbed me by the hand. He forced me low to make eye contact. And these were what we would consider on the edge of life kids, which means they were typically always within 4 weeks of not living anymore because of malnutrition, starvation, and whatnot. And this young kid looked me in the eye and he says these words. He says, "Sir, thank you so much for visiting our country." And this is still fascinating to me. I've said this story so many times. But he says, "I'm sorry it's in the shape that it's in." And it was just that moment. It was just, such a unique moment for him to say those words. But then he says this. He says, "My friends and I, we haven't had any food in days. Is there anything we can do to work for you so we can get something to eat?" Wow. And I was completely overwhelmed by the moment. I told the young boy no. We got back in our van and we drove off. And I knew for me personally that I would never be the same again. This isn't a short term mission trip. This wasn't, this was just a moment where I think God dropped me in the middle of hell, kind of slapped me in the face and said, "Wake up." The way God moves in this world is through his people. And if his people aren't willing to go to the hard places to do the hard work, then that's closing the outlet that God wants to use to see change and transformation around the world. So we came back. It's 2007. I'm living in Austin, Texas. Economy is starting to fall apart. But we came back and we decided to start a nonprofit. And I did a year-long research program and ended up starting this nonprofit officially in 2009. And so this year we're celebrating our 10th year anniversary. Yeah. And we were trying to care for these 33 kids in Zimbabwe at the time. And now we care for about 200,000 people around the world. And I look back at the moment where the plumber, the teacher, and the small church youth pastor invested in my life. And I realized they all have such a part of the story that God's, that God has led me into 25 years later. Mm.
Starting a nonprofit, I think a lot of people, and your book is called Doing Good is Simple, Making a Difference Right Where You Are. You did that. You made a difference by just taking that leap. I love what you said about, the fear that might be on the other side of yes, right? There's so many of us, I think, that get held back from taking some sort of leap, whatever that is, because they're not sure what's going to be on the other side, and fear really kicks in. So before I talk about your book, because I do want to get the idea of where the book came from, can you just speak to that person? We get a lot of people that are listening, especially from the sports perspective, whether it's a coach, whether it's an athlete, whether it's a parent whose kids play. Fear, cynicism in some ways sometimes gets the best of us and prevents us from jumping in and helping, taking that leap of faith. So talk to that person that struggles with maybe wanting to help and wanting to take that leap, but fear really takes shape and kicks in a little bit.
Yeah. So one of the concepts I've been processing the last few years is how do we get out in front of regret? And so oftentimes when we think about the word regret, we're behind it, right? We regret not doing something. So there's guilt, there's shame, there's frustration. And so how do we get out in front of regret? And so overcoming fear is one of the best ways for us to get out in front of regret, because fear will always hold us back from being the best athlete, the best father, the best neighbor, the best, you know, employee. And so oftentimes we live in such fear of the unknown, or fear of being vulnerable, or fear of, you know, really pursuing our true passions in life, because that's not what we're expected to do, that we end up like boxing ourselves into a life that we don't love. But fear is literally holding us back. It's like this invisible, powerful force. And it just brings so much frustration. And you think about the mental illness, the depression, the, you know, we live such beautiful lives in America for most of us. Yeah. And yet oftentimes it feels like it's not beautiful, even though we have food and we have clean water and we have electricity and we have, you know, all the different things that we have. Even if you're, it's just a normal middle-class family, we live such a great life. But oftentimes we feel like there's something more, and what we can't figure out is why are we not happy? And when you overcome fear, what you find on the other side of fear is your true calling, where you find your true self, and then you have this joy that explodes out of that, yeah, even if your life is harder on the other side of that, right? So if you think about people who pursue, you know, they pursue their callings in life, but their lives can be harder. They move to hard places. They choose hard careers. When I think of, you know, the teacher who literally, when I was homeless, brought me into her life and let me and gave me a room and food. She was struggling in her marriage because her husband was an alcoholic. And so somehow she overcame the fear of her own reality in order to serve me. And that was a massive moment. She had every excuse to say, I don't have time for another scenario. I don't have money. I don't have space. But she didn't allow that fear to hold her back. Instead, she served me and cared for me, and my life was completely changed. And she had the courage to say yes to the hard thing, to overcome her own fears. And now she gets to live and be a part of this beautiful legacy. And she gets to see how God has used her story to make an impact on people all over the world, and definitely my life and my family. So, and here's what's really important too. Like, there, you know, we, none of us overcome fear. We battle fear every day, right? Yeah. Fear of doing the next best right thing. Fear of having great character and integrity. Fear of living a healthy, beautiful life. Fear, you know, so we battle it every single day. So there are days I'm still battling these massive fears of what's next in my life. And so it's a tension point. And some days I win, other days I lose. But the more I can overcome fear, the better life I'm going to live.
It's really good. A couple more questions here with Chris Marlowe on the podcast here at Sports Spectrum. Doing good is simple, making a difference right where you are. The book released in 2016. I remember getting a copy and reading it. It's crazy, 3 years now. But that was a really powerful book for me to read at that time when I was thinking about writing my first book. Tell me why you decided to write the book. It really felt like a companion piece in a lot of ways to Help One Now and you know, and what that mission is about. But tell us about that book, because I know it's only 3 years, and books will last forever. So people can still read this, and they should still read this. Yeah. Tell us about that book.
Yeah, and you're totally right. It's still relevant, right? It's
very much so.
What we had realized is we, you know, Help One Now had found some success, and we were guiding people into living a more generous, compassionate life. And we knew that they needed a guide. They needed more depth. They needed more content from a trusted source. And so I really wrote the book really to help our people take the next step in their journey of generosity and making a difference. And ultimately what I realized in the Help One Now narrative is it was a whole bunch of everyday normal people who came together, especially in the beginning days, and they did whatever they could to help this org succeed. And so I'm the founder of the org, but I'm not the reason the org's successful. The reason the org's successful and has made a difference is because so many people stepped up and said, I will do something to make a difference. Some people wrote checks. Some people took trips. Some people advocated. You know, some people used their knowledge. And one of the things we talk a lot about, Jason, is the impact matrix. And so there are kind of four pillars of making an impact. One is, what gifts has God given you, and to use those gifts naturally. What talents have you earned on your own? You know, an athlete, for instance, that's, they may be gifted physically, but they have talents that they've earned and they can use those talents. And so three is, what is your passion? Like, what keeps you awake at night, that you just, you want to help solve a problem? And the fourth one there is, what resource base do you have? That could be money, that could be networks, that could be knowledge or whatever. And so for so many years, we saw all of these folks using their, this impact matrix to make a difference. And we wanted to put a book that was really simple, a quick read, into the hands of as many people as possible, so that they can also kind of take the next step in their journey of living a more generous, compassionate life. And what's for us the biggest win, and this is what I'm so proud about, but we've been able to make a huge difference because of the book all over the world. And the testimonies have been great, and we're so thankful for the impact. And the other thing is, there are so many folks who feel like they don't have enough to make a difference, right? And if you look at my story, it was a fourth grade teacher who was on the verge of a divorce that had two kids, and she made a difference. Doing good was simple for her. She cooked dinner and allowed me to eat it. She gave me a little extra space on a couch for a year. And so it doesn't mean doing good doesn't have challenges, but at the end of the day, you know, she was able to use what she had to make a difference in my life. And we can all do that one way or another.
I love that. Again, it's called Doing Good is Simple, making a difference right where you are. And you're doing that with Help One Now and partnering. And it's funny how the sports world kind of comes full circle for you and the work that you're doing. I was hired here at Sports Spectrum by a guy named Raymond St. Martin. And he now runs a nonprofit called Big League Impact. And I know Big League Impact has partnered with Help One Now, what you guys are doing, and making a real big impact through baseball. And I'm sure there's other sports connections that you have as well. But tell us about how sports has come into this world of Help One Now to allow you guys to make a really big difference with the platforms that these baseball players have.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. Our director of partnership is a guy named Peyton Junkin, and Peyton grew up with one of his best friends who ended up playing pro ball in the MLB, but also in Japan.
Yeah.
And Jason Stanridge invited a guy named Blaine Boyer on a trip. Blaine was a relief pitcher at the time for the Minnesota Twins, and they went on a trip to Haiti with Help One Now. And Blaine came back, and Jason and his wife Joy and Blaine and his whole family, Jency and others, they got super involved in Help One Now. They became massive advocates for our organization, and they ended up inviting just some really amazing folks, Adam LaRoche, and right now, you know, Brian Dozier's playing in the World Series, and they're down 3-2, and I'm stressed out about it. but here's one of the things we recognize with, you know, all of these baseball players. They're just really amazing humans, right? They would be caring for people no matter what, you know, what job they had, what profession they were in.
Absolutely.
But they all want to leverage, you know, kind of what God's given them to do the most good. And so it's just been fun to take so many ball players around the world. And then, of course, with Adam Wainwright is really close to Jason Stanridge and Blaine Boyer and some others. And so we ended up partnering with Big League Impact to build really this amazing secondary school in Haiti. It's one of the rare secondary schools in our community in Ferrier. We have a preschool and a primary school, but when kids hit, you know, eighth grade, there's really no path for education. And so Big League Impact, Kyle Gibson has kind of led the charge along with Brian Dozier and some others.
Yeah.
But they have partnered with Help One Now to raise money, not only to build the school, but to sustain the school. And so the good news, and, you know, kind of backing up, Blaine Boyer and Jason Stanridge were both on the Help One Now board for many years. And so they helped guide the org as well. And so we're super thankful for, you know, our partnership with Big League Impact and with, you know, baseball players, you know, in general. And it's just, you know, I love these guys. It's so fun. Like, we become friends. We become friends with their family. And I think what's really important is, you know, we treat them just like we treat everyone else. They're absolutely just, they really are normal people trying to figure out how to make a difference, but they have a platform that is unique. And the future, I mean, the conversations we're having now is just, it's even more exciting because they want to continue to do more and more. And I think what they've all recognized, and I'm speaking and my own kind of belief here, this is not their words, but my words, but they recognize no matter what they achieve in athletics, the biggest passion they have is to, one, please God, and to make a difference in the world with what God's given them. And so to see them be focused on kind of the big picture is pretty beautiful and awesome. And for Helpful Now, it's been a huge blessing.
For those listening that want to get involved, that want to do something good right where they are, or want to get involved with what the partnership with Helpful Now and Big League Impact, what's all the places, maybe it's just a website that people can go to that want to give back, maybe just participate in what you got going on?
Yeah, so I would say two things here. Help One Now, there's a few things about our org. One, we're invisible on the ground, and this is really, really important. We partner with the most brilliant leaders around the world, and we're invisible. And so this is not like kind of outsiders coming in doing the work. It's Help One Now partnering with these brilliant folks, getting significant work done. The most important piece of the puzzle right now is really, it's so important. We want to keep families together. And so two main narratives is we want to help families start businesses. Yeah. So that way they don't have to rely on us for their whole lives. So we help them launch businesses. It's about $1,000 per business to get launched. And it's fascinating. We're seeing a 96% success rate, an increase in wealth, about 500%. And the power of dignity, when a mom and a dad is able to start a business and provide for their family and hire people in their community and be generous to their own community, the transformation is phenomenal. The second piece of our family empowerment program is our education. We want kids to have access to the best education possible. And so we know if we can launch businesses and if we can help kids go to school, they can then transform their own communities because they have that opportunity at hand. And so we've created this thing called The Circle. It's kind of a pick your pace type opportunity. And you can join in, and for, you know, usually most folks give an average of $42 a month, and it helps us launch businesses and helps every $42 helps three kids go to school every year. And so you can go to our website, click The Circle, and you'll see everything you need to know. And some people, you know, you can join for $20. You can join for $42. You can join for, you know, $200,000. It's kind of whatever you can do. But together it creates like this mosaic of impact. And we're able to really get out there and make a significant difference in the world through our generosity as a tribe and a community and a family.
The website is what, helponenow.org? Is that right?
Yep, helponenow.org, spelled out. Yep.
Awesome. Helponenow.org. And we'll mention that again on the back end of the podcast. Chris, this has been great. Last question here. We ask this question to all of our guests here on the podcast. What are you learning from God right now? What's he teaching you with all that you're going through? You and I were talking before the interview started that you're about to enter into the empty nest role as a dad and as a husband. And that's happening in the season of life you're in, and certainly all the great things with Help One Now. So what is the Lord teaching you where he has you right now?
Oh man, so many things. I would say more than anything, right at this stage in my life, is if I don't love first, I'm going to mess everything else up. We live in such an explosive geopolitical climate, so many tensions in our country, it's so easy to get up every day and just fight and battle and yell and scream and like want to win the war of I think what's right and you're wrong. But ultimately, like getting up every single day and saying, hey, as we live in this new world of digital, and, you know, it can seem so intense at times. Ultimately, the most important thing I have to do in every single moment of my life is to love first. Because at the end of the day, God can only teach who he is, and God is love. And if his people aren't loving first, because we can be fierce and have opinions, and we could do all the other things second. But if we're loving first, then God will use us to make a difference in the world. And so it's easy to just choose not to love. So every day I just remind myself, I'm going to love people today the best I can. And if I love people the best I can, I know that's going to make the greatest difference in the world.
Hmm. Great stuff there. Chris Marlowe, author of Doing Good is Simple, Making a Difference Right Where You Are, founder of Help One Now. Great conversation here, buddy. So glad you were able to come on, and look forward to having you back on again in the future. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it, man. Have a good day.
Really good stuff there from Chris Marlowe, the author of Doing Good is Simple, Making a Difference Right Where You Are. And that's really where I sort of discovered Chris about 3 years ago, and got a copy of his book, read it pretty quickly in one setting. I remember underlining quite a bit from his book. It had a lot of storytelling in it, but it also had a lot of really great wisdom on just getting started with doing good. Listen, we all want to do good, right? There's so many ways to do good. You can support Sports Spectrum and the work that we're trying to do to bring the gospel to people through the lens of sports. You can support some of the great work that Chris talked about on the podcast through Help One Now and their website, helponenow.org. You can check out his book. There's so many ways to do that, but there's also ways to just go out and do good. One of my favorite examples is when somebody goes to a coffee shop or even a place like Chick-fil-A or McDonald's, and they go through the drive-thru and then they pay for the order behind them. And it's very sort of anonymous, right? You don't know who the person is in front of you. You walk up there, you get your food, and you go to pay, and somebody says, the person in front just paid for you, so have a great day. And just imagine the pay it forward type of aspect that exists when we all just look for simple ways to do good. And man, the kingdom, and I think about Jesus, the one who did the most good, right? And he doesn't want us to do good to earn his favor or earn his love. He already took care of that on the cross. He loves us unconditionally all the time. But what he wants us to do is to love him and to seek him and to desire a relationship with him. And out of that flows those good works that we want to go and tell others about Christ and be the hands and feet of Jesus and make a difference in other people's lives like Chris Marlowe is doing. And that's what Doing Good is Simple to me is all about. So thanks to Chris Marlowe. You can check him out on Twitter. Just search his name, Chris Marlowe. He's right there. And his website is doinggoodissimple.com. Doinggoodissimple.com. Great stuff there from Chris. Again, I want to remind you about our Football Sunday podcast, which is our second podcast from Sports Spectrum that's coming your way Monday, December 16th. Is when it debuts, and it's going to be 12 episodes, first-person stories from NFL players telling their story of how God has moved profoundly in their lives. It's a really cool project that I've been a part of and working on for the last few months, and we're really excited to bring it to you. These podcasts are really quick, too. They're 8 to 10 minutes long, so you could listen to Sports Spectrum, hop over, listen to the Football Sunday podcast, and you'd be done in 40 minutes or so. And really excited about this. We got people like Trent Dilfer, Matt Hasselbeck, Josh McCown, John Kitna, Nate Solder, Benjamin Watson, NFL players telling their stories, unique stories directly from the player themselves on how God has moved profoundly in their lives. I'm so pumped for this and can't wait for you to hear it. Again, debuts December 16th, 3 episodes debuting December 16th, the Football Sunday podcast. Subscribe, download, do everything you need to do to make sure that you get a chance to listen to this brand new podcast from Sports Spectrum called Football Sunday. Check it out today. Subscribe everywhere podcasts are found. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Sports Spectrum. Our website is sportsspectrum.com. That's the place to go to get all of our content. We love hearing from you. You can reach us on our social media pages, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. DM us, reply, like, comment, retweet, all of those great social media buzzwords. Do it. We see it. We see everything that you guys share, everything that you guys say, and we love it. We love to hear ideas, suggestions, comments on all of what we're doing at Sports Spectrum. We love you guys. We hope you have a great rest of your day. We'll see you next time here on Sports Spectrum's podcast.